Today on the Grave Talks, it started in a cemetery. A conversation with Rosie Page. It all started on a dark night in a cemetery with friends. Rosie Page slammed on the brakes, jumped out of the car to care for a young man standing in front of her with a massive gash in his head. Fearing the worst was about to happen, she rushed towards him to provide care, only to see this young, injured man disappear into thin air. This was the start of a life that would be filled with spirits seeking her out, to deliver messages not only for her, but those that she loved.
I think it actually started before I realized it. And I think when you start to develop like medium type gifts, you don't actually really trust them at first. Mm-hmm. So when you're young and you have an experience, you're taught to think by your parents, no, that's not real. It's your imagination. It's just, you know, make believe, or like the, you know, the belief, there's nothing in the closet or there's nothing under the bed. Just go back to sleep and it's all in your imagination. But as far back as I can remember, when I was a teenager is when strange things started to happen to me. I was always really brought up in the occult belief and being fascinated with the occult and stuff and Ouija boards and, like, you know, scary movies and witchcraft and ghosts and haunted houses. So the first thing that I recall happening to me with, you know, vivid detail is when I was a teenager. I would say I was 17 because I was driving with a friend and we had gotten off of work together one night. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie, she smoked and I didn't. So she was, you know, doing her thing. And I was just driving on some back road because she didn't want to go home yet. And I was like, let's go drive out to this cemetery. Because sure. I'm weird like that. And she was like, okay, whatever. I don't care. Do whatever you want. You're driving. So we were driving to what they call in our town as the Bottoms. And driving there down this really long stretch of dark road. And you can see it for, you know, miles going on, just a long stretch of dark line in front of you. And I slammed on my brakes. And there was a boy standing in the middle of the road. He was a teenager, probably about 15, 16 or my age. And standing there, he was staring at me like he needed help. And his head was cracked open and it was bleeding down his clothes. And he had on a black t-shirt and jeans. And I slammed my brakes on and automatically went to get out of my car to help him. And my friend said, what are you doing? And I said, don't you see this guy standing in front of us? His head's cracked open. He needs to call 911. We need to get him help.
Yeah.
We need to figure out what to do because he looks like he's going to die. And so I opened my door and I went to get out of my car and I went toward him. And as I went toward him, he just vanished. And it freaked me out at first, but I was completely sure that, like, there was nothing in my mind. Like, there wasn't, you know, I wasn't tired. I wasn't asleep. I wasn't under the influence of anything. There was no reason I would have seen a full body person that I was convinced I needed to slam my brakes on because I was going to impact him with my car if I didn't. So that was the first incident that I remember. And then one other incident at a cemetery, another night at a different cemetery with some other friends, where a black dog kind of followed me and jumped on me. And I guess it wanted to go home with me. And as my sister got freaked out about it, thinking it was going to attack us, and we got in the car, and then the dog went toward the car, turned into a green ball of light. And I know this sounds totally like crap, but it's not. It turned into a green ball of light and followed us a little bit further down the road and then disappeared.
Well, everyone knows if you're feeding the dog a Purina Plus, it'll turn into a green ball of light. Purina Plus, turn your dog into a green ball of light this Easter. Purina Plus.
I will write that down.
That's a little inner, you know, because they're spot. I'm kidding. No, I just made it up. Wow. I mean, what goes through your mind when you're sitting there and you are seeing this happen? That has to be, I mean, mind blowing, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, well, my sister didn't believe it to the extent that she told me it never happened and that that dog wasn't even there. So I was like, well, do I listen to her? Because she's completely logical. She's completely left brain. or do I listen to the fact that I felt it jump on me and heard it panting and saw its tongue, you know, waving around everywhere like a friendly dog does? And I was like, I have to listen to what I experienced and what my senses were. I was completely, you know, like I said, like I didn't do things like a lot of kids did in that day. I was completely sober. So I was like, something strange is going on here. What is it? I'm going to go ask my mom about it. You know, I'm going to ask around.
So, but didn't your friend say that she was scared of the dog? Did she? So what did that imply, that she saw or heard the dog as well at some point in this experience?
Yeah. And then when we got home, I had some pants on that had a yellow, like windbreaker pants that tear away, and they had a yellow stripe down both sides, down the leg.
Yeah.
And I said, look right here on my hip. There was muddy paw prints and claw marks on my pants.
Yeah.
And so I said, there is your proof right there. That happened. We weren't imagining it.
And then she went to saying that she never saw the dog?
No, she, I guess at one point when you start to finally absorb it and you've dissected it with everything logically to try to say it could have been this or that, you have to kind of accept maybe it really did happen.
Yeah. Do you think the idea on that where, because it blows my mind where for some people it can be literally right in front of them, like what you just had happen there. Mm-hmm. And they can experience it. You know, some people say, I got to see it to believe it. Okay, you saw it. Now, can we believe it? But sometimes they still back away and go, no, that didn't happen. And it's one thing to be logical, but it's a whole other thing when it's almost denial. But is it denial, or is it some sort of coping mechanism that's just in certain people's DNAs on how their brain knows, you know, it can handle it. This can handle it. This can't handle it. Almost like a computer of some sort where it's like, nope, we need this much processing power to go that far down the line. And some people just don't have that processing power and they know they're going to shut down, or their body or their brain knows it's going to shut down if it somehow computes that to say, yeah, you saw that. And then it turned into a ball of light. Is it like a certain thing? It's like some sort of like survival thing that gets into people where it's, there, when they recall the memory, because memories are always reconstructed piece by piece. That's why it's hard sometimes to recall things completely accurately, because that can be influenced. Do you think it's something like that where they literally then truly believe it didn't happen because their mind will not allow them to replay what it's saying could not happen?
I think that's a good question. And that's what we try to prove, I guess, through all of the endless nights of not sleeping and trying to get evidence and data and trying to get, you know, scientific explanation versus psychological explanation versus, you know, other explanations that it could have been, debunking things and stuff. But I think a lot of the time, and it's changed a lot in the last few years, I will say, and I'm extremely happy that it has, because then people can come forward and tell those stories without getting burned at the stake metaphorically.
Sure. But yes.
I think that people just don't want to understand something that they think is going to shatter their whole entire belief and their system of how they were raised and everything that they know.
And that's it's exactly what I'm saying. It'd be a trauma to absorb that. And if you're seeing that trauma coming at you, I mean, a lot of times traumas, you don't know they're going to happen until they're happening. This one is almost one like you can see the writing on the wall of like, if I absorb, if I process this, that is going to blow all of this up. So there's a certain amount of choice that goes on, but I wonder how much of that is just an instinct thing, because no matter how much evidence comes out, no matter how many ways, you know, there's ways of proving this or that, some people, no matter what, seem to just not believe. And I don't know that there's ever truly a way or will be a way to, you know, to do that. I know a lot of us don't really necessarily have that as our goal of like, let's prove it to people. It's more like, look, we're kind of operating from the standpoint of this exists. You're on the same page. You'll enjoy this. If not, you're going to think this is stupid. And I don't really care. It just feels like it seems like a break off. And here's another point with that, too. We're in a world where people will not accept basic facts of like things that are not necessarily traumatic, but just basic facts. You know, you can literally, you know, go depend. And obviously we see a lot of it in politics. And I'm not saying either side. I'm just saying, because it can happen on either, where it's just like, No, here it is. This is the video of X person saying X thing. It happened. And here's all the context around it. It's not a little snippet. This is a fact. This happened. This occurred. And they'll still pretend that it's not real. Like, that's not true. That's not, or sometimes, oh, it's manipulated. No, it's not. This is really what happened. So if we're in a world where people will not absorb and process just obvious shit, or things that nobody used to argue about, how are we going to get anybody to like go into this road anymore? I feel like sometimes the more we advance on things, it's like we're almost going further and further back in other ways.
I do too. I've always thought the more that we advance, the more downfall of civilization will happen.
Essentially.
We'll rely on something else other than our own selves.
Yeah. So let's go back to the cemetery, the first cemetery story, where you saw the guy with the head gash. Did anyone else in the vehicle see it when you got out, or was it just you that was seeing this?
It was only me, which is what stinks, because, and I would like to say it was probably because my friend was too worried about trying to get stoned or something. I'm not trying to be mean. I don't shun that. If people do that, that's their choice.
Sure.
But I think she was too worried about trying to do that, that maybe she wasn't even looking. Maybe she was, because I have a belief that, I know they've done a lot of experiences with people using psychedelics to heighten your spiritual gifts or your ability to receive things or see things. But I, for one, believe in, like, when you go somewhere and you know you're going to investigate, I think that you should be sober.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah,
too many things can happen, like breaking legs, you know, dropping equipment, hurting people on accident, safety issues.
Sure. Yes. So no one else saw that person that was there?
No. That had to make you wonder,
okay, what the hell was that when it disappeared? Did you ever get a chance, you know, years later or even, you know, shortly after, to look into that in greater detail of like, was there an accident here at some time? Was there something that would make sense as to why that would have happened in that exact spot?
I did, actually, just within the last few years, because stranger things have happened since then. And more often, like on a daily basis now since then, and that was, you know, few and far between. They were stretched apart in like occurrence. But like, I did research and didn't find any situation of on that street where a young man to that description had passed away. That being said, since then, I have figured out you can be somewhere and a spirit can be there that doesn't even actually, sometimes hasn't even passed away in that spot,
mm-hmm,
for some reason. And they somehow, they are magnetically drawn, or they are like a lighthouse. If you have an ability to see things like that, you're almost like a lighthouse. Does that make sense? And you put off a little beacon, like a light. These spirits and things see that light, and they come to it.
Mm-hmm. Because they know that you'll be able to sense them. That's interesting to me. Also, the way that that it was presenting itself to you. One would hope, and I would almost say a majority of the stories that I've heard over the last 10 years, and it's in the thousands, a majority, the ghosts, the spirits, when it's representative of a human being, they're not in a grotesque state. That's a very small percentage of the stories that I've heard in accounts. So when you have that sort of thing, why do you think that is, that something would be presenting in that sort of state?
To me, this is just the best of my experience.
Yeah.
When something like that occurs to me, spirits are stepping in and they're halting, distracting, and warning you of something else that might be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing whatever desperate measure they have to do to get your attention sometimes.
Okay.
That's the best of my explanation, just from dealing with other situations in the last few years,
mm-hmm,
and ignoring spirits that were trying to communicate with me to the point to where they went to drastic measures to get my attention, like poltergeist activity, because I wouldn't listen to them before that, because I would, mm-hmm, write it off and debunk it and just think it was, you know, just corner of my eye or just my imagination, or I was just waking up and that didn't really happen. So I'm just going by like basically what my experience is, because everyone's experience might be different.
Of course.
But in my last few years, I've had some really weird experiences, and they scared me at first, but I realized over the last few years, those spirits were like, hey, we're trying to get your attention so hard that you're ignoring us because you're so busy that we're having to go to extreme measures to get your attention and try to tell you some kind of message.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's start at the beginning there. When you look back retrospectively and the time you didn't realize anything was going on, how did that all start? What were some of those initial things that you kind of looked over, and where did it go from there?
Yes. I can say anywhere from wrecks that I've been in, but not very good relationships that I've been in. People that maybe were just around you in your, you know, in your circle of people or in your energetic field. Maybe they didn't have the best intentions towards you and you didn't really know that. You didn't pick up on that or you weren't aware of that. And say, like my cousin hung himself several years ago. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And
sure.
He had tried to communicate with me before he did so, before he hung himself. And I was at work. I was in another country and I was asleep while he was awake here. And I had blamed myself for all of these years of him doing that to himself. I guess that kind of caused a little bit of like a blockage in me. Well, in the last few years, the reason I've come to be more investigative and more open to things is because he started communicating with me several years ago, trying to warn me of someone and some things that were going to happen in my life or that were going on. And he was always protective of me in real life. Mm-hmm. So it's really weird that in the afterlife, he was still protective of me and trying to be a protector of me of these things that were going on. And I just kept trying to write it off as, no, that's not really happening, but it was.
Sure. Tell me more about what were some of the signals that you were getting that you wrote off. And then where was the moment? What was the signal where you kind of said, oh, my God, there is something going on here. He is trying to communicate.
Are we allowed to say a bad word?
You can swear all you want.
Okay, because in the story, there's a bad word involved.
Cool.
I don't curse a lot, especially on, you know, interviews and stuff. But sure.
I do.
So let's get it. Huh?
I do.
That's okay. I don't mind if you. I guess because, I don't know, because I'm used to being around kids all the time.
Sure.
So I had several instances where I was sleeping, and I felt covers being pulled off of me, but I thought maybe the heavy end of the cover just had went over the side of the bed and it made the rest of the covers follow it and fell on the floor. That was my thought process the first time. And then I'm like, you know, waking up my husband and my kid and saying, because he's a little baby at this point, I'm like, did y'all pull the covers off of me? And they're like, what are you talking about? We're asleep. Like, you could tell I had to wake them up in dead sleep to say, hey, did this happen? And they're like, no, we're asleep. And I was like, okay, sorry, go back to sleep. I'm sorry I bothered y'all. I'm just crazy. So the next time it happened was either a night or two later. My covers levitated up in the air like someone was holding on to them. And they actually came to a point and they pulled up into the air. And then came off of me and dropped in the floor. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm not crazy. And this is really happening. And I woke them up again still. And I was like, hey. Did you see anything weird just happen? Did you do anything weird? And they're like, no, we're trying to sleep. Leave us alone. And I'm like, man, I am just losing my mind here. I need to go see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really kind of what I was telling myself. And then the next night, I was sure that I wasn't losing my mind. I was asleep. And when my cousin was alive, he would call me all the time and I would answer the phone. And he would say, what are you doing, fucker? That was what he called me.
Yeah.
All the time. That was his name for me. He didn't even use my name hardly ever. Mm-hmm. Or when he was leaving, you know, he'd be like, well, I'll talk to you later, fucker.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
Well, after the two nights the cover thing happened, the next night I heard and I felt breath in my ear and I heard someone say, wake up, fucker, wake up. And I was like, oh, my God, I woke up and I automatically wasn't scared. I knew who it was.
Yeah.
So that, I guess that's like one instance of like the graduation of the level of activity that I had to have in front of my face before I grasped that it was really not me, just imagining it.
Sure. So how did you connect the dots here that, that he was there trying to warn you about something or give you a message and not just letting you know he was around? Where did that bridge kind of get crossed?
I was going to go somewhere with somebody, and around this same time, I was going to go somewhere. My keys came up missing, and no one could find them. And I knew where I had left them.
Yeah.
Because I'm not like a person that just like has crazy chaos going on. Even though I have kids and stuff, I don't like just lose stuff every single day.
Sure.
And I remembered seeing my keys where I had left them, and I went back to get them, and they were not there. And I looked everywhere, even in the place where I eventually found them, and they weren't in that place when I looked. Then later, I went somewhere, I came back, found my keys on top of my son's toy box, on top of toys that I knew I had already looked, because I thought that he might have hid them in there. Honestly, I thought my kid could throw them in there,
sure,
you know, as a joke to hide them from me.
Yeah.
Because kids do stuff like that.
Yes. And then it was like, okay, this is what he wanted you to.
Yeah. So, and that's not even the only thing. I mean, other things after that, completely the same type of thing, but like a remote getting thrown across the room and landing across the room on the floor, a TV switching off and back on by itself, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Once the thing that he was warning you about, once you found some resolution there, did it stop?
After I connected the dots and I realized what it was and what like I would need to do about it to protect myself or keep myself safe, yes. Yep. And he still came through two other psychics to talk to me, though, after those incidences. But it was to give me a message that he was always with me and I could always talk to him, and that, and they picked up that he had committed suicide on his name and that he was a cousin. I didn't tell them anything. I just left it kind of like,
yeah,
I'm going to wait and see what they get. And then I'm going to tell them just to see if it was, you know, really happening. And I thought, he came through and said that he was sorry that he did that, committed suicide, and that I couldn't have changed that if I had answered his phone call, that I needed to just let that go and stop blaming myself. And everyone else needed to not blame themselves anymore either. So then I called his mom and his brother and told them the same thing.
Wow. That's got to be quite a moment when you have that realization of, did you have any others in your life where you felt like a loved one or something was trying to guide you and not just, you know, come to you because they're viewing you as a beacon?
Yes. I also have this other weird thing, and I don't really know what you call it, and I've looked it up. Have you seen Dr. Sleep?
I have not.
Okay. I don't know how to describe it then, but when people in my life were about to pass away, I would literally say, this person's going to pass away within so many days, and it would happen. And that started a few years ago after all of the stuff with my cousin too. And my stepdad passed away, and I just had this feeling he was in really bad health, really bad shape. And he had just came home from hospice. I don't even know if this is connected to the question you just asked me or not.
Sure.
But, well, yeah, it is. Okay, because you asked different experiences. So I told my mom I felt really bad. I didn't get to visit him because I had to go to drills because I'm in the Navy Reserve, and I had to leave town the day that he came back home from hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pack and leave and go, you know, far away. And I felt really bad for some reason. I didn't get to see him. And I was like, why do I feel so bad that I do not get to see him? There's something weird going on. And I told her to watch him carefully, that I thought he wasn't going to live much longer, that he had 2 or 3 days left. And my brother got really mad at me when I said that. And I remember, I think I went out of town on Friday, and I think it happened on Monday that he passed away. And that happened. And after that happened, actually, it was really bad. I was the only one there, I felt like, that could really, like, understand what was going on. My mom was freaking out. My sisters, one of them fell on the ground, like, in shock. The other sister was actually, she was just really crying, and it was their dad and my stepdad, so it was their real dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all were just like going, I don't want to say nuts because that sounds bad. Some of my brothers, I had to call them. They weren't in town. They lived far away, and I had to tell them, and they didn't understand when I told them that their dad had just passed away because they were 3 hours away and they weren't there. Then after the chief of police, I talked to him, and after the ambulance and whoever has to do like pronouncing the hour of death and stuff like that, all left. My sisters and everyone, they were all in the backyard, and I was inside sitting on the couch because I just sit alone by myself a lot, if that doesn't sound weird. Mm-hmm. But it's usually because I'm having weird experiences, and or I'm meditating. I do meditate a lot. I meditate every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sitting there, and I had this weird sensation. My back started hurting, and I tried to stand up, and I was really sad. And I tried to stand up, and I couldn't stand. I had to hobble. Well, my stepdad had a really bad back problem, and he had a prosthetic leg. And in my mind, I was thinking that I was so sad because I hurt all these people, and they were crying because they were sad about me. So it was like I was having a thought process that wasn't even my own in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is interesting. I know what this is. This is him.
Yeah.
This is him, my stepdad. And he wants me to tell them something. And so like I guess my experiences aren't always the same as I feel like other mediums' experiences are, because I haven't been doing this very long. But I went to the backyard and watched out the window and watched them. I had to hobble, and my back was like messed up. And I watched them and just wanted to watch over them for a little bit and like kind of tell them goodbye, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really tell them about that incident for a while because I wanted them to be able to be out of shock. Sure. And accept that he had passed away before I started telling them something like that. But I felt like he was coming to me to tell them that they didn't get there. Nobody was there. He was out in the front yard and walked outside and had a heart attack literally right off the front porch. So no one was there to tell him goodbye. And I think he just wanted to tell them goodbye and that he was sorry that he left without telling them goodbye.
That's very interesting. So, I mean, and having that ability of kind of knowing that this is going to happen before it does happen, is this, do you view it as a blessing or a curse?
I think it's a blessing only to the point to like, not that you know that that's going to happen because you have no control over it, but that you are like having this feeling that something is telling you, if you want to spend time with this person and you want to kiss them goodbye and tell them goodbye and that you love them, or you want to see them before they're gone, then this is kind of an urgent message to you, myself, that you need to do it now.
So how does your family react when you show up and you're like, I really love you. It's great seeing you. It's been a while. Do they think, oh shit, what's going to happen
really
to me?
I don't really like let on anything because I'm always surprised by it. Does that make sense? Like I'm always not really sure that that's what it is. And then the more it happens, the more confident and sure that I get that certain feeling of worrying about someone and feeling bad, like I didn't see them.
Yeah.
Then I start to realize that that's kind of what it is, because it happened. And my real dad, it happened with my grandma. It happened with my uncle. It happened. And with my best friend, it happened.
Wow. Do you think that when that happens, is that another source of energy or consciousness that's coming in and telling you? Or do you think it's something within that individual that's not necessarily conscious, that it's that the individual's not conscious of, but they know, or their body knows, and their soul knows that it's about to end? And that message is going out there and you're picking up on it, and they don't even necessarily know it at that moment.
I think that's what it is, the second one, that they're somehow, maybe they have a higher self,
mm-hmm,
that knows already and is preparing itself.
Sure.
and some way to go, you know, to transition from the physical body to wherever it's going to go afterwards. I do think sometimes people don't get that, though, when tragic or immediate things happen, like shootings, murders, you know, homicides or car wrecks and stuff like that. I think those people, most of the time, it seems like they get stuck somewhere that happened because they were not prepared and they didn't actually transition. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Where in essence, if there's like a disease or something that's, or age that's taking someone, the body kind of knows where it's going to be at, or the soul knows where it's going to be at even more than consciously that individual. So it's kind of preparing and it's going into the next steps. When it's a shooting or something of that nature, it's almost just like somebody just jumping up, pulling the power plug, and it's like, whoa,
yeah,
you know, don't do that. It's almost like a computer, you know, where it's like updating, do not turn off. You know? And then if you turn it off and you try to turn it back on, it's sometimes just kind of stuck in this limbo and it's never getting quite back to where it should be.
Yeah.
It's on, it's function. It's like there's power there, but it's not quite, it's dead for all intents and purposes. You can't use it. It's almost like, is that where a soul is at when something like that occurs? And then what does it take when that happens, you know, for that soul to be able to reset itself? Obviously, it can't come back into its former body, but to be able to find peace or to move on.
I'm starting to learn kind of that I haven't claimed to cross any souls over or anything like that. And some people say that they can do that, but I'm starting to learn, I think, that when you're dealing with those souls, that they're like dealing with a human that has trauma and you're their counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to gain their trust and some kind of connection with them so that they'll trust you enough to believe you that you can help them move on.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Rosie. In part two, when a person dies tragically and suddenly, how can they ever understand that they're dead and find peace? Is it possible to haunt ourselves with our own demons or even positive energy? How did Rosie discover that she was a medium in recent years? And what did she learn about her abilities once she accepted them? Those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a gravekeeper, that's a supporter of our program, sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a gravekeeper. $5 a month keeps the show on the air and gives you access to hundreds of our interviews, all of them in their entirety, as well as advanced episodes of the show, and all of it commercial free. That's right, no ads. You can binge away for days upon days with nonstop ghost stories. patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click become a gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.